Welcome to the Newtown Big Dreams Podcast, an interview-style talk show that's your gateway to the fabulous and fascinating people who relocated to start a new life. Whether you're new to our podcast or your city, our fellow neighbors from across Canada, North America, and the entire English-speaking world share their stories of reaching new horizons and big dreams. So sit back and relax as we navigate in-depth and intimate conversations with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, executives, creatives, and anyone who can share their story about their Newtown big dreams. And now, here's your host, Luke J. Menkes.
Could be a lot worse.
Very true.
So, Molly, you've been in Kelowna since about 2015.
Yes.
And tell us the story of how you got here.
Okay, so right before I moved to Kelowna, I was living in northern Manitoba. I was working at a newspaper up north, about 8 hours north of Winnipeg, so in Thompson, one of the furthest towns that you can go on a road. And it was very cold, minus 50 winters. I had to plug my car in at nighttime, and I did 2 winters there, and I thought, I can't do another. I want to see another part of Canada. So originally, I grew up in Nova Scotia, eventually making my way out west, and never had really intended to come to BC. I never thought about it growing up. But when I was in Manitoba, I just started applying for some jobs out west, and I got a couple accepted offers, and everyone told me I'd be nuts not to choose Kelowna as one of them. So I Googled Kelowna, I looked at the photos, and I just thought, okay, this is the perfect next place compared to where I was living in Manitoba.
Right?
Yeah.
What was summer like in Manitoba?
It was like 23 on a good day. Really not that super sunny and hot.
And it got cold at night?
Still cold at night, yeah. It was really cool in the summertime, though, because it would only be dark for about 4 or 5 hours. So I would work mornings, and I would have to be there at 4 a.m. I was working at a radio station as well there. So when I was doing morning news at the radio station, I worked at 4 a.m. And I'd have to go to bed while it was sunny out because it didn't go, the sun didn't set until about midnight some nights. But you'd see the northern lights every single night. I went dog sledding. I had a really cool experience up north. But the summers don't compare to Kelowna summers at all.
2 years was enough.
Yes.
Yeah. And is there a lot of black flies?
There is a lot of bugs everywhere. Black flies, they have all these other bugs that are huge beetles called pinchers. And if they land on you, they literally pinch you. And they're terrifying. So it's nice to come to Kelowna and not have to deal with so many weird-looking bugs.
Yeah, right? So I guess with those bugs, you're almost hoping for winter.
Yeah. Yeah, because right?
they'll die. They go away, right?
Yeah. And it is interesting. In Thompson, there wasn't that many rodents because they didn't live up north. So we didn't have to deal with raccoons. I never smelled the smell of skunk. So then when I was coming out here, I was like, oh my God, I don't miss that smell.
Right?
Yeah.
And is there a main industry in Thompson?
Yeah, there's a mine there.
Okay.
So
what kind of mine?
Nickel mine. So the majority of the people that live there work at the place called Valet. So I would do a lot of interviews with those people and the management when I worked as a journalist. And I actually got to go underground to the mine and go through it, which was a really cool experience, but also terrifying because there's no lights at all. So if their flashlight goes out, they're in the pitch black, and they made all of us turn our flashlights off.
Just to experience.
Yeah, and your eyes don't, they don't kind of get used to it because there's nothing to see. So you're just sitting there in the dark, and like, people go through that every single day. Wow. It was very interesting. It was freezing.
Is that those helmet flashlights?
Yeah, so if your helmet flashlight, if they died or they had like handheld flashlights, if those died, they'd have to like, I think every couple hours they would do checks through a walkie-talkie just to make sure that everyone was where they're supposed to be and they had lights and everything. So when we turned ours off, people could stay up there for maybe an hour with no light, just waiting for someone to find them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that is something. It's interesting. I was watching Anthony Bourdain, and he was in Butte, Montana, in this episode, and it's a mining town. So some of the same experiences, not the bugs, but, you know, the mocking and the danger of it. And the workers really took a lot of pride in what they do, you know, because they're providing for the world, right?
Yeah.
You need nickel for a lot of things, I guess.
Yeah, everyone is super proud of their work there, and it really showed in the town. It was also the majority, maybe like 50, 60% were First Nations people up there. So I got to experience a lot of First Nation culture, but I also got to experience how they're being treated compared to how we're being treated.
Really?
So when I was a journalist, I would go into a different town where it was more of a reserve, and I would see them living in a house, not like anything we see in Kelowna. It was essentially a shack with nothing on the walls other than like graffiti, no running water, no lights, no nothing. And they had full families of 5, 6 people living there. And
that's terrible.
It was very eye-opening onto like what Canada could be doing and what people are living like. Still in a town that, I mean, I'm not quite sure of the population in Thompson right now, but there's still enough people that we could be doing more for them and seeing them in that city, struggling with addiction, struggling with everything. It was a sad, sad situation to experience all that as a journalist.
What kind of responses did you get to your stories?
I think it was both. Like there was a lot of people that wanted them needing the help and they wanted to help them and all that kind of stuff. But then there was also, you know, the opposite opinion.
Like they have to take care of themselves and.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not Thompson's responsibility. Like there's always that kind of black and white opinion when it comes, I think, to First Nations issues. And I think it's a very tough situation, especially as a journalist. I have to be very unbiased in my writing. So I do both sides of the story, and I have to just let everyone else choose their opinions. Mm-hmm. Whether I believe their opinion or not, that's not my responsibility to kind of change the story to benefit someone.
Yeah. Well, it almost sounds like a unicorn, an unbiased journalist. But, congratulations if you're able to keep that up.
Thank you.
So that's really good. I like asking questions about where you're from because we're all here in Kelowna and we get lots of chances to talk about our great city, and we will. But it's always interesting to me to hear about other parts of the world, especially Canada.
Yeah, you know? I've experienced a lot of Canada, and I've been able to, growing up in Nova Scotia, I would travel from Nova Scotia to Ontario a lot because my adoptive family lives in Ontario. Mm. So I traveled from Ontario to Nova Scotia in a car. And then when I moved from Manitoba to BC, I drove out here as well. So I've been able to experience the majority of Canada and what the different provinces kind of have and experience all of that. And it's been really interesting to see
same
country. No, not the same car. I still have the same car that I drove from Manitoba here.
Oh, okay.
It's on its last legs.
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So you did a Google search. Someone said you should consider Kelowna if you want to move out west. You did a Google search. It looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find work right away?
Yeah. So I accepted a journalism job as soon as I got into the city. Well, before I moved here. Mm-hmm. So I moved out here for that job and I worked there for about a year and a bit. And then I've transitioned actually out of journalism. Just because I really struggled with my mental health when it came to journalism and writing the bad stories and sharing the bad stories with everyone. And it's kind of an interesting thing because journalism is transitioning to digital.
Right.
And digital means clicks. And people want to know the bad stuff that's going on and want to know in the city. If there was a car crash, that story is going to be clicked compared to a good news story that I wrote. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like the idea. I really struggled with it internally of digging and trying to find that good story that I really would like to write compared to getting a press release about a death or a car accident, knowing that I would get a better response and better clicks for the day if I did that story compared to one that I actually wanted to write.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, I kind of transitioned out of journalism into marketing. I still write for myself, freelance, as well as I own a blog. So I do my good news stories that way. And I just kind of stick away from the news now just because it wasn't meshing with my mental health at all.
Right. It can be really depressing.
Yeah.
And it's a interesting phenomenon. I mean, I read the news way more than I should. I have since I was 10 years old. I don't know why, but I think it was like a family tradition. So my mom got the Toronto Star delivered to the house 7 days a week, and she would have her coffee. So she would invite me to join her. So I started with the comics and the sports, but I started reading everything because I love reading. And it's true what you say. The sensational stories captivate the attention, but they wear on you.
Yeah.
I imagine as a writer, it must have been pretty stressful.
Yeah, it was a very stressful industry. And I read an article or a study when I was a journalist that said the most depressed people read the news as soon as they wake up.
Yes.
And I read that when I was working in radio, working at 4 a.m., doing the morning news on the radio. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, this is not my forever because of this situation, because I need to, you know, like my priority is my mental health. And I don't want to promote other people to get in a bad mental health situation if I'm in that situation right now.
Right.
And I love the news. And I still kind of, I think it's very important to know what's going on in your country and in the world and in your city, let alone like internationally. Mm-hmm. But I think there needs to be a little bit of a situation where, you know, like, okay, I'll read the news for 10 minutes, but don't go and scroll and like get into it so deeply where it affects your whole entire day.
Sure.
But know what's going on, know enough to have a conversation with someone about current events or know what's going on in your city politically. I think that's very important as an adult, mm-hmm. And as a voter. So it's a really hard mix, and I love writing and I still write. I just choose what I write now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it is true that there are a lot of great things happening every day. There's random acts of kindness. There's businesses being created. There's opportunities opening up, you know, things being built, art, you know, there's so many great things that are happening.
And I think Kelowna does a really good job of promoting that as well. Like, yes, we have our news websites that we go to locally where we can find those clicky articles that they're going to get the clicks because it's an accident, because it's a court case, because whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But when you look, there's so many other local websites that are really doing well promoting the good things, the good community aspects, organizations, people, like this podcast, for example. Like there is so much good in the city. So if we can transition ourselves to focusing on that compared to these, you know, if it bleeds, it leads aspect of news, the mental health situation and everyone's lives would probably be a bit more optimistic about our future.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Just as a side note, was it a total coincidence that you were born in Liverpool, England, and then you grew up in Liverpool, Nova Scotia? Was that a choice your parents made or?
It was actually coincidence. Yeah. So I was born in Liverpool, England. Mm-hmm. My dad and my stepmom still live there. So we as a family, before my parents separated, we moved to Ontario. Mm-hmm. And then we had visited Nova Scotia as a family holiday. And we went to Liverpool and the South Shore of Nova Scotia. And then we went back to Ontario. We thought about moving. We didn't. Mm-hmm. And my parents separated. My dad went back to Liverpool, England. And we randomly moved to Liverpool, Nova Scotia because my mom got a job at a resort there. And it just, it was a weird coincidence, but I love it. I think that's the coolest little, you know, tidbit of information that I can give someone is...
Yeah.
Because people don't realize when I say Liverpool, they think Liverpool, England,
yes,
automatically.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, no, I've actually lived in both.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard of Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
No one probably has because it is tiny.
Is it close to Halifax? Or?
It's about an hour and a half south of Halifax, and it has one stoplight.
Right.
It's tiny. I went back recently for our annual privateer days.
What's privateer?
A privateer, they are the settlers from Liverpool, so they're kind of like pirates, but good pirates,
right.
I guess.
So pioneers.
Yeah. And it's a very big fishing, or not big, it's a very small fishing village, I would say, with the one stoplight. You know, my high school had 300 people and 70 graduates in my class. Everyone knows everyone, but the majority of people are fishers there. So it's a really cool town, and they have the Mersey River. Liverpool, England also has the Mersey there. So there's a lot of actual meshing of both towns and cities.
Yeah. Well, studying Canadian and American history, a lot of the town names were named after where they came from in England, right? Like New York even was named after York. And so that's just a fact.
Yeah, maybe there's some kind of togetherness of Liverpool and Liverpool.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing the early settlers to Liverpool, Nova Scotia, were from Liverpool.
Yeah, I should look into that sense, more.
So you write, I believe, a lot about mental health.
Yeah.
And you had some issues yourself that you like to talk about. So tell us a little bit about that. What got you on the topic of mental health?
So I've essentially always written since I was a kid. That was always my way of communicating my feelings. I wouldn't write specifically to anyone, but I just wrote my thoughts. It was a way of getting out.
It's like journaling.
Journaling, yeah. Keeping a diary with a locked key. No one else could see it. So I started to deal with a lot of mental health in junior high, so around grade 7. That's when I kind of started, I guess, rebelling and understanding more about my parents' separation. And my biological mom and I, we didn't have a really good connection. And I think that can be very important for a woman who's growing up to have that connection with her mom. So I started really struggling, and I dealt with self-harm for about 12 years. And
is that like cutting?
Yeah. Cutting. I now have tattoos covering them all because I'd rather people comment on my tattoos and my scars. And I think a lot of people don't understand self-harm and cutting.
I think that's true.
And they just ask about it so bluntly. And I'm fine with talking about it. Like, I struggled with it and I overcame it, and I would love to be able to talk openly about it. I just don't think a lot of people understand the situation behind actually doing it.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about it? What is, so if a young person is doing this, what's going on in their head? What's the motivation?
So for me specifically, it was a trigger situation where I was really struggling with my emotions and feeling anything. So to me, self-harm was being able to feel something. And I think it's different for every single person. And I think life and self-harm can be triggering for so many people. But it was just, for me, I just needed to be able to feel something. And yeah, I struggled with it for about 12 years. My family put me on and off antidepressants. Those made it worse. So I got off of them. I didn't take them. I eventually overdosed, and I ended up in a hospital one night.
Was it on antidepressants?
No, I overdosed on Tylenol. Yeah, I took a lot, and I went to the hospital right away because I realized I should not have done that, and it's not worth that, and I deserve to be able to continue my life and not end it at 14. I had so much more to live, and that was kind of my wake-up call, which is ironic because it was actually my death call. So I end up in the hospital, and I go there alone. I walk there, and I'm very dizzy, and it's getting a bit too much in my system. And I get there, and I go into the emergency, and they end up making me drink charcoal to coat my whole entire stomach so it can't go in it anymore. Like, the Tylenol can't seep into my stomach. They don't stomach pump anymore, and I think that used to be a very big thing when it came to overdosing and pills. And anyways, the doctor that essentially saved my life told me that I should not have been there. That if I waited 5 more minutes to arrive at the hospital, I wouldn't be there. Wow. And Dr. Blackadar, he has literally saved my life. And I think it's a very scary thing of people who are younger, they don't understand. And I didn't at the time either, what that situation is going to happen, and how it's going to affect everyone else. So I kind of get through that. And a few years ago now, maybe 4 or 5, I'm not sure, I actually had a family member who passed away due to suicide. And seeing our family's reaction and everything that has happened since then, it very much opened my eyes to wanting to be able to help people never experience that. And then also having their families never have to say goodbye. Because looking back, and if my family would have had to say goodbye to me at that time when I was 14, I wouldn't have accomplished all that I've accomplished. I wouldn't have seen life in such a beautiful way that I see it now when I was struggling so deeply and I just saw darkness back then. Yeah. So I'm glad that I got out of it. I'm glad I got tattoos over my scars and to be able to like move on from that. It doesn't feel like it was me at all when I tell these stories or I share struggles that I've experienced. It feels like a whole completely different person. And I really do believe that when I was in that hospital that day, I came back a different person.
Yeah. Wow. That's an amazing story.
Thanks.
So it's interesting. So I've suffered from depression. I lost my brother to a drug overdose, heroin. A lot of family members kind of considered it a suicide because he was very depressed. I don't think he was intentionally trying to die that night, but it was more apathy, you know, didn't really take precautions, he wasn't thinking tonight I'm going to die. He was just like, let's get high.
Yeah. That numbness of feeling something. I think that really is, whether it be drugs or cutting or, you know, alcohol or anything, that something is making you feel something after you haven't felt anything for a long time.
It's interesting, you know, when you think of it, the psychology, like cutting, you said, is it's a desire to feel something. So I'm guessing you feel numb. You feel like you don't have any feeling. You're feeling numb. You want to feel something. But alcohol and drugs, on the other hand, are kind of an effort to feel numb.
Yeah.
Because the pain is too much.
Yeah, it's the opposite.
So I think, you know, and I'm not a scholar or a psychiatrist or anything like that, but my understanding is there's a dissonance in the brain. So you're actually feeling a lot of pain, but you're telling yourself you're not feeling anything. So it's kind of a contradictory two sets of feelings at the same time. You feel numb on the one hand, but on the other hand, you're in tremendous pain.
Yeah.
At the same time.
I always say that I have oceans of emotions.
Right.
Because I feel so much. I feel immense happiness, and then I can feel so much sadness. And I've always felt comfort in my sadness because that's all I knew growing up.
Yeah.
Is this deep sense of, what's going on? Why does my family not together? Why does my family not love me to the extent that I think that they should? Or I see other families loving each other in a different way, So I think I've always felt that like huge, overwhelming sense of emotion. And when I was going through my really dark mental health days, I was trying to suffocate those and I eventually felt numb. And then I was kind of releasing that numbness when I was self-harming.
Yeah. So what sort of topics do you write about?
Mostly mental health. It's kind of evolved in the sense. So my blog's called The Book of Molly. And I got that name from when I lived in Thompson. I did a novel writing month called NaNoWriMo. So you have to write 20,000 words in 1 month of a book. So I did that and I wrote my story, The Book of Molly. And I finished that and I felt so happy that I was able to write maybe about 15 years of my life so far. I have never reread it. But I loved the name that I chose for my book. So I wanted to change that into a digital space that other people could read because I wasn't ready to edit and fix those 20,000 words. So I was just going to move on. So it's kind of evolved throughout the years of what I'm loving and appreciating at that time. So currently I really like to talk about mental health because I think it needs to be talked about. I'm also kind of growing my love and admiration for sustainability and plastic free and eliminating this extra consumerism. So I'm following a lot of people about that topic and I'm really loving it. So I started to write about that more. Nice. And then also just about my travels and places that I go, big hikes that my boyfriend and I go to, places around the world that I've seen, just to talk about my experience and have like a photo diary for the future.
Nice. Very nice. But that's not what you're doing for your principal employment.
No. So that's what I do for pleasure. For my 9-to-5 job, I work in real estate marketing.
Okay.
So I work currently at Fortune Marketing Inc. Nice. And we do sales and marketing for new real estate developments. So I'm a marketing coordinator there. And currently I'm in charge of a couple of developments in town and I do all the marketing, writing for them, blog posts, newsletters, social media, kind of all that kind of stuff. So
fantastic.
Change into marketing.
I am quite familiar with Fortune.
Okay.
I've done several deals with them. So before they were a brokerage, they had to farm out a lot of real estate business. And I was a referral partner.
Okay.
And my office used to be a block away from where your office is now.
Okay.
I used to be with a company called Fair Realty, but I was pretty much on my own. I became a broker recently, but I was the office manager. So I had a broker supervising me, but it was basically like once or twice a year, he would come look around and go, yeah, it's good. But we would scan every deal to the broker. You know, he would supervise in that sense. But the office space was mine. And so we would, you know, frequently have coffee and, you know, with
that's such a funny
Don
connection.
And yeah, it's so, so great. So recently I joined a company called Epic, which is sort of a competing business to you guys. So we do projects. So we're doing One Water Street and Arriba is a new development on the west side. And I got a sales office on Bernard.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I don't really view it as competition. I want to know what projects you're working on. And you should know what projects I'm working on. And we could kind of gauge where the market is going.
Yeah, real estate is a very interesting thing in Kelowna. I was never, ever into it before. My boyfriend and I just bought our house recently.
Nice.
And it's very interesting to kind of switch from journalism to real estate marketing. It's a very new, always changing every single day. But
yeah,
I really do like that aspect of it and just kind of writing the good stuff.
Yeah. I love it because I think it's one of the best things in life. Obviously, you know, affordability is a big issue. But I think for people who can afford a home and buy a home, I think it's a beautiful thing and it's an amazing thing. And I love construction. You know, I love seeing things get built. And I always say, you know, you look at any building and that started as a piece of dirt and an idea in someone's head, right?
Mm-hmm.
And think of all the human beings that it took to put this together, right? From the architect to the city planner to, you know, the marketing people, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's really great.
Mm-hmm.
So I just love real estate top to bottom.
Yeah, and now that I know the feeling of owning a house, I think it gives me a whole new kind of love and admiration and fire for doing that because it's such a cool feeling and to have something as your own and your own space. And I just can imagine how all of the homeowners in Kelowna now feel.
Right.
So it's nice.
Yeah. And it's such a complex thing. Like you were talking about some of the First Nations people and the conditions they live in, and it's terrible. And we take a lot of things for granted. You know, the indoor plumbing and walls that have art on them and insulated walls and climate control.
And a fridge.
Right. And a refrigerator. And the temperature is exactly the way we like it. And you turn on a tap and water comes out. And, you know, it's it's a big deal to build a house, but we kind of take it for granted.
Yeah, it would be an interesting thing to do, just to kind of go through your home, even if you're renting, and just kind of look at everything that you maybe do take for granted and maybe that you don't realize that that's such a big thing of even a coffee maker or a place to put fresh garlic. Yeah. There's so many little things that we just need to go buy, and we need to go buy, and I want the new version of this, and oh, there's a new iPhone out, so let's get it so I can be up and trendy. But we have everything we need and more.
Yeah.
So let's appreciate it a bit more so we can actually, you know, like hold something and appreciate it and get that value out of it instead of walking around your home really unaware of all the great things that you have that maybe other people don't get to experience. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my favorite things about a house, and it's one of the first things I look at when I go into a house.
What's that?
Is the windows. The windows. I mean, it's such a, it's an important thing because it keeps the cold out and the heat out, you know, when it's extremely hot, but it enables you to see, right?
And feel the sun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, windows are just such an amazing piece of technology. We don't even think of it as technology, right?
No,
it's just something that a workman installed.
And are annoyed if you have to replace them because they're so expensive.
Exactly.
I'm in that situation right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... You know, older houses can be a challenge, but the nice thing is you can kind of put your own personal touch on it.
Yeah, a nice fixer-upper is a good fixer-upper.
Yeah, it's a good project to have if you can afford it.
Exactly, yeah.
I kind of grew up with that. My mom was a little bit crazy when it came to renovations. I remember grade three coming home from school, and there was like plastic tarp over my room. And she's like, "Are you going to sleep in the den for a few weeks?" I'm like, "What's going on?" She's like, "We're doing a renovation." But she didn't bother to tell me.
You're just going to sleep somewhere else and don't worry about it. I'm your mom and you can't say no.
Exactly. So I was kind of pissed off. But now I kind of get excited when I see renovations.
Yeah. And she was probably being creative and using that creative part in her brain that she may not have gotten to use all the time. And to her, that was her fire.
She was very creative. And that was one thing she was amazing at. She was just a little bit inconsiderate.
You maybe have to let everyone else know that's what's going on in the house.
Yeah, exactly. The end result was always great, you know, but
did you enjoy sleeping in the den?
Yeah, kind of. You know, I try to view everything as an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
A camp out.
That was kind of the way I coped with loneliness and depression myself was just imagine I'm kind of on a journey. I'm on a camping trip, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always an adventure in everything, depending on how your mindset looks and what you're really seeing things as.
Yeah. It sounds to me like you moved to each of these towns by yourself for the most part.
Yeah, I moved to Manitoba not knowing anyone, and I also moved to Kelowna not knowing anyone. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty – I moved to Kelowna when I – or sorry, when I moved to Manitoba when I was 18, and then I moved to Kelowna 4 years ago. So what was I, 22? Mm-hmm. And both quite young to move away and start in a city that you know no one. But I moved out of my family home when I was 14. So I've kind of been house hopping and finding non-biological families my whole entire life to kind of get stuck in. And they eventually adopt me, quote unquote, into their families. And thankfully, I've found kind of friend families and also my partner's family in Kelowna that have really kind of created that home for me here.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. How did you deal with it when you first got here? How did you go about making the first friends that you made?
I found Kelowna the hardest city to find friends in, but I have the best friends that I've ever had once I found them.
Interesting.
So other than my childhood best friends that I've had since grade four, because they're always my forever.
Why do you think that is? It's a bit of a paradox.
Yeah. I think maybe I was a bit nervous when I first moved to the city, and I found friends throughout my job. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of adults do, is they find their friends through their jobs, but maybe they don't mesh exactly the way that they need to become that deep friendship. Mm-hmm. So some of my best friends, one I met through one of my coworkers, and she is a doll, and I love her to death. She's super creative, and the way that she sees her world mm-hmm. is very artistic, and I love that. And my other best friend I met through Instagram, which is crazy because I have a love-hate relationship for social media, and we can get there if you want to, but you have to work your way. And I didn't really grow these friendships for about the first year or so that I lived here. And I went to the networking events and I did the small talk, and I just realized like that wasn't my thing and I'm not going to find my people there. Mm-hmm. So they just happened on me, and I really focused on the friendships, and I think it can be more challenging for women potentially. I'm not sure to find friends because girls can be quite clicky mm-hmm.
and competitive.
And I've been there. I felt that way through friendships and friend groups. Mm-hmm. And thankfully I don't feel that anymore. But that in itself was a big thing that I struggled with for a long time in Kelowna, was friendships and girlfriends and kind of finding those people. And once I found them, and I think everyone can do this, is you just make those friends a priority. Mm-hmm. I'd rather two solid best friends than a group of 20 people that probably all feel competitiveness between each other. And you can't go into that deep level. I hate small talk. I can't do it.
Me too.
It makes me cringe when I have to go somewhere knowingly that I'm going to do that. Yeah. So I'd rather like meet someone and get on that deep level right away so I can have a meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
So I can leave that and be like, wow, that person is amazing. They went through this, this, and this, and they came out on the other side, and look at their smile and look at how they live their life. And yeah.
Yeah.
So
no, I totally relate. I see the value of networking, especially in my business, you know, but I have a hard time doing it.
Yeah, personally, like, networking is hard.
Where are you from? What's your name? Where are you from?
What do you do for work?
Know? Yeah,
that's
the same questions over and over.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing I think, is we put so much value in what we do instead of who we are.
Right.
And I found that Kelowna is really, that's a big thing for them, is networking. And I love it because it helps your career so much. And I've gotten so many freelance opportunities and work, and I met so many great people through networking. But I just try and, you know, change the conversation a bit more into who you are. Like, I can get your business card. I know what you do. That's great. But who are you? Like, deep down, like, what are your values, and why do you love your life? I care way more about that than your job title. Yeah. And I hope people care the same amount for me of, yes, I'm a marketing coordinator. And yes, I do freelance marketing. And yes, I'm a blogger. But like, deep down, there's a whole story in there.
Yeah.
And I'd rather talk about that.
Right. Well, I mean, in a few minutes, we got to talk about real estate on a little bit deeper level. Mm-hmm. You know, what do we love about it and what's interesting about it? Instead of just like, I produce ads.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And we got to know real estate in a different town. And we wouldn't have talked about that unless we asked that question and we dove a little bit deeper and about conversations. I think questions are a very interesting thing. Obviously, you feel the same way. And I worked in journalism, so I know the value of a question.
Yeah.
And I'd rather ask an open-ended question and get someone talking than asking their title.
Right. Exactly. That's why I love this job. This is one of my three jobs I consider, and I don't get paid for it, but it's probably my favorite.
And you get to know people on this deep level that they walk in probably questioning, just like I did. I wonder what he's going to ask me, because I'm usually on the other side of the interview, and what am I going to say? And let me refresh my mind and like pretend and plan out my answers. And then it's a whole different conversation, which I think is great because you're getting to know me in a way that I didn't expect to tell you.
Right. Exactly. And I just want to touch on social media briefly. We're getting close to 40 minutes.
Okay.
So, social media, this is my opinion. Tell me what you think. I think it's like candy. Too much is not good for you. And young people especially, but older people too, spend way too much time on it. So what I'm trying to tell my daughter, and it's hard because I feel like a hypocrite sometimes, and I remember what it was like to be a teenager, you know. I want her to spend more time with actual human beings than she does on social media. I think it can be a good tool for marketing and also to get people together, right? To say, I'm having an event, come and meet me, right? But just scrolling through your newsfeed endlessly, I think, is a terrible thing.
I agree wholeheartedly.
And the biggest thing is, like, the content we consume, I'm always saying that what we take into our brains is even more important than the food we eat, because if we're taking healthy things into our brains, we're going to make better food choices, for one thing, and better choices all across the board, right? So we tend to fill our minds with what is, like, mental junk food. So it's really tasty, wanting. Sitting won't kill you. If you have a bag of Doritos, it's not going to kill you. You're not going to get cancer from eating one bag of Doritos. But if that's all you're consuming mentally, I think it makes people lazy. I think it makes people have a hard time relating to other human beings, to having deep conversations. It makes us kind of ungrateful for all the wonderful things that we have, like our windows and our coffee makers. Because it shuts off a part of the brain that is, I don't know, should be absorbing more positive things, more deeper things. So it's like mental junk food.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
So your listeners can't see us, obviously, but I'm nodding my head and my eyes are bulging out of my head because I agree completely. And I've never really made that similarity of food, but it's so interesting because when I catch myself scrolling, I don't remember one thing that I saw. Not one thing. I'll scroll on Instagram for 10 minutes and I can't remember one photo. Not one. And I think it has a lot to do with the isolation that people feel as well because of the competitiveness of you're putting stuff on your social media as a highlight reel.
Yeah.
And you want, it's essentially your visual resume, especially if you have a public account, because if you're going to get a job or you're going on a first date or you're meeting someone for the first time, a friend, you're going to scroll through their Instagram to try and find out who they are.
Right.
Which is also a scary thing when you think about it.
Yeah.
But you compare your life to this person's life, and it's not real life. It's a highlight reel. And I catch myself doing that. Like, I went on a huge hike recently with my boyfriend, and we went and traveled on top of a mountain. There's huts through Alpine Canada, and you can rent out these huts for the weekend. And we rented out, blah, blah, blah. We come home, and I've been posting about it for a long time, and I posted something during a work day, and my coworker turned to me, and she goes, "You're not on a mountain right now," because I had just posted that I experienced that. And it's very eye-opening to see, like, okay, well, when you see this, it's probably potentially staged, especially if it's an influencer. Mm-hmm. They probably got it for free, let's be honest, and they edited it, and they spent 20 minutes writing a caption to make sure that there was value in there. Mm-hmm. And I really, really understand the need for social media, and I didn't get my first phone until high school, let alone people are getting them now in elementary school. Mm-hmm. And I met, like I said, one of my best friends, Jocelyn, on Instagram, and I see the value of it, but I see the negative effects so much more. Mm-hmm. And I've been really trying to turn my phone off and not have that addiction to it where I have it and And I just have to check if there's a message. Yeah, I just have to check if how many likes I have on my photo. And it's really not healthy.
Yeah, it's not.
So I've started to make the switch. And I think a lot of people are opening their eyes to the mental health situation with social media and scrolling. The biggest thing that I can recommend is buy an alarm clock.
Mm-hmm.
And put your phone outside of your bedroom at nighttime. I got a little basket and I keep it in the living room and I put my phone there. I try to turn it off by 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Sometimes, obviously, I fail, but I keep it there so I don't have to use it in the morning. So I use my alarm clock. It wakes me up and I don't automatically am on my phone scrolling.
Right.
Because that's people's first instinct is, okay, I'll turn the alarm off. Let me just scroll for 5 minutes before I get out of bed. Mm-hmm. Can you see what that's doing to our brains and our mindsets right now? Like, you wake up at the very beginning of the day and you scroll and then you're comparing yourself.
Yeah, it's other people's right away. Shit.
And they may be even in a different time zone. So you see them like, oh my God, they've already gone to the gym and they've eaten this delicious, healthy meal of organic, vegan. And then you're sitting in bed being like, oh, I feel so shitty about crappy about myself.
Yeah.
And that's not a good way to start your day.
No.
At all.
Exactly.
Turn the phones off. Go outside in the real world. There's no better connection than grounding yourself to nature.
Yeah.
By far.
So true. And Kelowna has a lot of great coffee shops too. I just want to put that out there.
And parks.
Yeah. And great water. Place to just, you know, talk to people.
Yeah.
And nature, of course. Yes.
Go to a coffee shop and just introduce yourself to someone or just say hi. You don't even have to have a conversation, but just say hi. Or if you pass someone on the street, say hi, wave, smile. Those little connections, they're going to make your heart a different size.
That's right.
And you're going to feel good when you're doing it. Look up from your phone for 5 minutes. Make a real life connection. Just like what I really like to do is when I'm feeling overwhelmed because of social media, I'll turn it off and I'll go outside. Mm-hmm. Whether I go for a walk or a bike ride, but I really pay attention to everything, all my senses. So I see what I'm looking at. I hear the wind and the birds and the trees. I feel the sand on my feet. And just to like have that very big, overwhelming sense of we're so small and we live in such a beautiful place. And let's experience it instead of not experiencing it and missing everything because we're on our phone checking out someone else's life and not living our own.
So true. So true. And one last little tip I'll give is I turned off notifications for almost everything. So I didn't realize this, but you can actually turn off notifications for your phone where you wouldn't even be alerted if someone tried to call you. So because of my business, I get notifications for text and phone calls, but not for emails, not for Instagram, not for Facebook. I realized that just seeing that little red, you know, bulging, flashing thing, I got to check.
Obviously.
9 times out of 10, it's crap or it's nothing. But it's like, oh, did someone like something or did someone disagree with something I posted?
Or does someone need me?
Right? Does someone need me? So I don't get any notifications. And I realized I can go like 3-4 hours and I forgot to check Facebook. Like, wow.
I recently did that as well. I turned off my notifications for text as well. So they don't pop up on my screen. So when I'm at work, I can put my phone away and not worry about it. And I literally have to click into the text information to then see if I got text.
That's a great idea.
It doesn't even show like the little, like you have 5 texts little circle on an iPhone. It doesn't even show that. So I look at my phone screen and I see nothing.
That's what I'm talking about.
Life-changing.
It really is. It's amazing how much we were able to agree on.
Yeah. Today. It was a really good interview.
Yeah, I appreciate your time, Molly.
Of course.
And sharing your story with us. And I'm sure our listeners are going to love to hear it.
I hope so. I hope they learn a couple little good tidbits.
For sure. Oh, last question. Who would you like to nominate on the show?
I've been thinking about this for quite a while, and I come up with a good handful of 5 people.
Okay.
But I'll start with one who's my best friend, Stephanie. I know Stephanie Mackey.
Okay.
I know she's been nominated before, and I know she's a little apprehensive, so we got to get on here because she is this beautiful creature of art and wisdom, and I think she has a lot to say. Also,
is she an artist?
She's a graphic designer.
Okay. Great.
She's a woman of many good qualities. And then also, I would like to nominate Jane, who's the manager of Moto Yoga Kelowna.
Jane. Do you know Jane's last name?
Howell, well, we can look I think. Up. Howell.
Moto Yoga.
Yeah. Moto, yeah.
And what do you like about Jane?
So I started recently, not recently, I go to Moto Yoga regularly, and Jane's aura about her is just magnificent. Mm. She is originally from Australia, and she eats, sleeps, and breathes yoga, and I've got a lot of lessons from her, not like on the mat, off the mat, in real life, at the studio, everything. I just think she has a really good understanding of we're small and there's so much out there, and she has a great accent, so you can't go wrong with that. And she gives great hugs.
Accent.
Yes.
That's great. Where is Moto?
It's on Pandozi on the second level, kind of really close to Bean Scene.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the best yoga studio in town.
I want to give it a try because every time I go to yoga, I'm like, why don't I do this all the time? The last time I went, I didn't have a great experience, to be honest. Mm. I don't know the type of yoga, but it involved a lot of contortion and straps and props and stuff like that. And the instructor was a little bit aggressive.
Okay.
So I had a bit of acid reflux that day from drinking alcohol. And we had to do something that was basically a headstand. And I was like, I'm going to puke. She's like, hold the position. Hold the position. She was like very aggressive. And I'm like, that's not what I'm coming to yoga for. I want to stretch and, you know, expand.
Yes.
I want to push myself.
I've expanded a lot at Moto.
But I also take care of myself at the same time.
I think that's what it's all about. Right. And with Moto, I've experienced that. I've gone to many yoga studios my whole entire life, and there's just this magic that Moto has. Their space is huge. They're open to having new students. They never yell at you. They're very good, and I think Jane would be an awesome interview.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Thanks again, Molly.
Thank you, Luke.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Newtown Big Dreams podcast with your host, Luke Menkes, and his authentic guests. And we love our listeners and hope you subscribe now to learn more about the amazing journeys of our incredible guests who relocated to find a new town, big dreams. And remember, make your dreams big.